This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Really, 007.
And then to have other songs, like say, you've got, If There Was a Man, which has this sort of Viennese kind of waltz sort of feel to it. And so it has, the lyrics are very much about that classic, someone dreaming of the right man, someone dreaming of Bond, I'm just waiting for you to sort of, wait for this great person to arrive. And then you got Where's Everybody Gone? Which is this really sort of aggressive synth guitar. And then, and the lyrics about, which I only for this, I sat down and kind of looked at the lyrics and things. And I'm thinking, because he obviously wrote this for Necros, who's kind of ex sort of KGB. There's all these referencing to this crumbling kingdom. I think, is this the end of the, USSR? And, Gorbachev is just about to come into power, a couple of years later. It talks about, hallowed halls and, this just, the kingdoms and things. I think, is Barry kind of, is he sort of, really got behind? And maybe I'm reading far too much into this.
Chrissy Hynde too.
Chrissy Hynde. And and also, just how well, much range does she have?
Yeah,
there's two songs. Were her vocal range is fantastic. She sounds different. Like say, whereas Everybody's Gone could be, you would assume was for a man.
Absolutely.
Such an aggressive and her voice is much deeper. But then Where's Everybody Gone? And then you've got that the fight. Off the bat, out the back of the plane. And it's basically that.
You have the synth, don't you?
So
good. It must be the, along with Golden Gate fight, the sort of snow job. Mm. It must be, again, he peaked at the end, I think, in terms of his action music.
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable to listen to. I mean, they're so synonymous, the sequences. Absolutely, oh dear. Too much.
And actually, you touch on the lyrics of those songs, but actually, the lyrics in The Living Daylights, which I joked about, would not be able to understand what he says, but lines like, 100,000 people, I'm the one they blame. I mean, it's such a lovely line. And again, when it uses the 100,000 changes, everything's the same. I just think that's absolutely brilliant.
It's class.
And obviously, fair play to A-ha, who were involved with writing those lyrics. But I do think they're really strong. If you actually listen, they play into the kind of feeling of this guy against the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, massive.
And it's content. And it's sorry, go.
No, Chris.
No, I was just
going to talk about
so excited.
Something much more sensible.
As I got going now, but it's and that's what I love about Living Daylights is that it's contemporary, but it's also timeless. And that's the one thing I worry about some of the later films is that they've aged quicker. I don't know if it's something to do with the Cold War, the fact that it lasted for so long, and that we kind of struggle to find a villain. As such, but the music in this, like you say, it's very 80s but it's timeless. And it's also dealing with timeless, you know, themes, which is, you know, the old guard and the new guard coming in. And, you know, that Dalton's Bond, you know, we've discussed about kind of our issues with Daniel Craig, but for Dalton just came in and just pitched it just perfectly, you know, in terms of, you know, respecting the origin of, you know where the character comes from Fleming, but also it's about now. And I think that's, for me, Living Daylights just absolutely stands shoulders above, you know, particularly later kind of modern Bond films, just in terms of the music, the story, just everything about it.
I do often worry about the moment where John Barry was taken into an editing suite at some point and told that that absolutely iconic score he did for the opening of View to a Kill that was going to be nixed just for a little bit of snowboard action over water for the movies. And how that might have gone down.
Again, not one of my faults in the film. No, you won't hear me.
But for me, that goes back to why, if you have Dalton in a film, you can't have a bad Bond film, because Dalton wouldn't have allowed that to be in his film. So he reins in John Glenn's moments, shall we say, and just allows him to be a good director. And you get it in Octopussy 2 with Tarzan. You know, that wouldn't have happened in a Dalton Bond film. He would have he
bit of restraint
quit.
Now and then, Joel.
And sit as well in Octopussy.
Piss off.
Still admittedly love them, but I totally agree.
Oh, dear. Yeah, in terms of the process I mentioned before, there was a bit of falling out, and it seems to be that when this happens, you create some of the best music and films. Like we said, John Glenn with Timothy Dalton. I think it was more so on License to Kill, was it? There was a bit of little
That's
bit
what
of
I understand,
fallout.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you get a great product. And on this one, I think both of them are obviously pretty talented. I mean, I'm a massive fan of Aha. The back catalogue is fantastic, and they do epic songs. You know, they're quite long songs for the time. The instrumentation is brilliant, and they're obviously producers as well as songwriters. So I think that was the problem, that why there were two versions, because they kept a bit naughty, you know, like Leave for the Day, we recorded that, and then Barry would have changed it by the time they came back or something like that. And they did. There's been squabbles about it, but I've heard Paul Wachter, you know, the main songwriter and the guitarist, he says, they disputed how much was who and who wrote what, but he says he has to credit Barry's arrangement for making it sound like a Bond song. That's the key thing that gets it from a great song to a great Bond song, I think.
Yeah, and you know what? Obviously, at the time, they were hugely popular, weren't they, Aha? And in retrospect, I bet they're actually quite thankful for that Bond song, because I've heard they weren't particularly interested in James Bond. It wasn't like Duran Duran, who obviously were huge Bond fans, and they felt really privileged to be part of a Bond film and really made the most of it. And I respect them so much for that. Whereas with Aha, they weren't particularly into Bond. I think it was probably record company got approached, and they're like, yeah, this would be good for you. It'd be good for the film. Let's do this. And they just kind of did it. But I bet in retrospect, that song will last and be better known around the world as time goes on than any of their other songs, because it's associated with a Bond film. And it still gets played in the radio. I sent you a picture the day it came on in my car on Radio 2. They played the Living Daylights, you know, so it's still
that's
getting national
so good. That's,
radio airplay.
That's so
you know.
Pleasing.
It's incredible, isn't it?
How could you not? I mean, driving to that must be the most exhilarating thing. A lot of my favourite ones are like that, aren't they? Like the Honor Majesty's, you know, instrumental theme tune, goodness me. Skiing, driving, all that. It was a big hit. It was number 5 in the UK, number 1 in Norway. Of course, Aha from Norway. Rob, have you seen the music video to it?
I don't think I have.
Well,
no, I don't think I have, actually.
It's filmed in the huge 007 Cubby Broccoli stage at Pinewood. But the reason I mention you, Rob, it's directed by a guy called Steve Barron. people might be blank heads. Anyway, he did a lot of unbelievable music videos. So he did 4 songs that reached number 1 in America. So Take On Me by Aha, Money For Nothing, Dire Straits. So a lot of them have these sort of effects with the sort of CGI on them.
This is an FYR link, isn't it?
Well, it is. It is, Rob. We're
gonna 90s get that,
so. Yeah, yeah. Oh, have you got it, Chris? Right. Yeah, Bryan Adams' Heaven, he also did. And Billie Jean. He directed the video to Billie Jean. Which, again, it does have that sort of simple, brilliant, effective video, but with a little bit of effects on the end of it. And that's what the video has in this. But, Rob... Oh, he also did Let's Get Rocked, one of my favourites, Def Leppard tracks. But anyway, he did...
What's the tune?
Oh, and he did Toto Africa, I'm just reading this, and For Your Eyes Only, the song. But he directed two films that I... well, two of them are very different. Mike Bassett's England Manager.
No way!
Yeah. And the other one, Rob, I think it's one of your favourite films. He directed Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original film.
He did!
He did!
No,
yeah.
No!
So there you go.
Oh my word. What a revelation. And what films to be a part of.
Yeah.
Brackets, never seen Mike Bassett.
And he's English as well. We wouldn't get an American director to do Mike Bassett. I think.
You want to play soccer?
Yeah. That's amazing. I have no idea. Yeah. That's incredible. Incredible.
But they're in the video, yeah. It's quite a crisp video.
When the podcasts align, you know.
Yeah, this is Rob's other podcast, which look at overlooked films, don't they?
Yes, we do.
I didn't know this. I didn't know this. Yeah. So I'll have to check this. This is the next one for my train.
We talk about movies that are unloved and see whether they need a second spin.
Yeah. I tell you, there's a film which it's probably not famous enough to work for you, but it just shows my obsession with Timothy Dalton. But Hawks, which is was a film he did between Daylights and License to Kill. It's just superb.
Is it really?
Yeah. Right, superb. And I'll tell you what. I'll tell you. Can I bore you with another one of my stories?
No.
Yes.
Please.
I don't know if you guys are into football at all, but there was a. There's a manager of Liverpool called Gerard Houllier, and some years
Rob's
ago.
A Liverpool fan. And,
Liverpool fan here.
So I assume you've heard of him then. Yeah. Anyway, I was.
You know, I'll just have to take down the photographs of him I've got up in my hand.
Yeah.
I was having dinner with him one night, and he.
What? You can't say that. No way that's allowed to be said.
You're a football presenter, weren't you, as well, Steve?
I do a lot of sports stuff, yeah. And I love the way, actually, I purposely said that as casual as though I'm always a famous football manager.
Is he as much of a lovely man that he sounds like? He seems like the most lovely, lovely man.
It was great. And he invited myself and a few other sports journalists out for dinner just to sort of, you know, get to know us a bit. And I thought that was a lovely gesture because it's not like that happens all the time.
Amazing.
So anyway, we're there. But the funny thing I have is I always find it a bit awkward talking about football when I'm not working, but I'm with people who work in football. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I would go to a press conference and interview a manager about a football, his team, the results and whatever. But when you take us out of that situation, it feels a bit weird to still talk about football because normally I'm kind of asking them serious questions and it becomes a strange, friendly relationship.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was a bit awkward. I was a bit awkward, a bit not sure what to say, really. And he said, you know what, don't talk about football. He said, I get so bored talking about football all the time. And so I said, well, what else? He said, I love films. I absolutely love films. By the way, if you could all imagine this in a French accent, it would be much better. And
his lovely, soft French cadence.
Yeah.
Lovely voice.
He said to me, so what's your favourite film? And I thought, well, do I go with the Bond film, you know? But I thought, it's just not original enough. So I went with Hawks. I said, sorry, you won't have heard of this. It's a little British film from the 1980s. But I just said, it really touched me when I saw it, and I absolutely love it. And it's called Hawks. And he said, oh, I love Hawks. Timothy Dalton, Anthony Edwards. What a great film. And we just spoke for and we just talked for an hour about this film. And he's the only person I've ever met who's ever heard of it, apart from me. And... it was quite extraordinary.
Oh my word!
So there you go.
We need
a little story. So it's a very overcome. When it was released in America, it had a different name, but I think it's a great film. It has aged, and you can't even get it on like DVD and stuff because it was not a successful film. But Anthony Edwards was a fairly big name after Top Gun at the time, and it was him and Timothy Dalton, and I actually think it was a really good film. Yeah, and the musical score. While we're talking about music, was by the Bee Gees.
No.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure they scored the whole film. Yeah, so you get some real kind of
you wouldn't get that now.
Weird sounds going on.
He also Barry Gibb is co-author of the story, and it's written by Roy. Oh, written by
this is the most
Roy Clark,
brilliant thing I've ever.
Most
heard
famous
of.
For Last of Summer Wine, Keeping Up Appearances, oh, Open yeah. All Hours.
Yes, wow. That's right.
Well, mix.
It's weird. It's just
Dawson
like,
doing
it's like
all Open All Hours
in the room with all that knowledge.
No, Dalton's got a red nose on the poster. I'm looking at it right now. Like what? A massive, yeah. Like Comic Relief style red nose.
Yeah, yeah. He's. I mean, it sounds grim. Yeah, he's terminally ill. Well, Anthony Edwards is terminally ill. Timothy Dalton is potentially terminally ill. They're in hospital together. Whoa. And this red nose thing, he kind of freaks them out in the middle of the night by putting this on. And they eventually break out because they're worried they're just going to die in hospital. And they want to have one last adventure. So they break out.
Incredible.
Yeah, I saw it like on TV one, and I watched it purely because, you know, Timothy Dalton, who I loved as James Bond, was in it, and it was probably on telly around 1991, and I'd seen him in License to Kill at cinema, and I just wanted to see this actor in something else. You know, I had forgotten he was in Flash Gordon at that point, and so I just watched this film because I saw he was in it, and it blew. I hadn't watched a lot of dramas at that time. I was only like 14 or 15 or something, and it really blew me away. It will have aged. I haven't seen it in a long time because the VHS tape I had on it, I haven't got a machine to play it on now. But
I've just found
the Anthony Edwards Top Gun.
Have a live watch along.
The whole movie's on YouTube right now. Like, you can watch it anywhere else, but the whole movie's on YouTube.
Like Mac and me.
Wow. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Do you know Mac and Me? I saw that as a pirate of Mac and Me on VHS. The quality was awful. I mean, it's like terrible. Yeah. But then the weird thing was when I saw a proper version, I realised it wasn't much better.
And to link all that,
that's actually true. That is very terrifying.
The two first films I remember seeing at the cinema in Rawtenstall, which is near where we grew up, in Rossendale in Lancashire, were The Living Daylights and Mac and Me at the same time. I was very, very young. I can barely remember
together.
Them. But I grew up presuming that these were two absolute classics that everyone had seen. You know, obviously, The Living Daylights. Oh dear. Right, anyway, coming back to the actual title song, it's the first time and only time that a non-American or British act have done it. Pet Shop Boys were initially asked, but they wanted to do all the songs. Yeah. So that must have been that Barry had these three songs in mind, I suppose. And they were like, well, no, we don't just want to do the lead song, we'll do them all. But they had worked on stuff, and it came into a song which they put on one of their albums. It's that same sort of synth.
It is,
quite crisp.
Recognisable immediately.
It is. So this is such a long name. This must be the place I waited years to leave. It's quite complicated. And it's, yeah. It went on there. Oh, listen to that. It's pretty gorgeous, isn't it?
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bit of Barry. Yeah, dated, but it's still good.
Yeah, down with that.
It's a voice slightly less
so
Bond,
mate. Right?
Yeah, it is very.
It's no Living Daylight.
It's nothing. Therefore, I have to move on. I have to move on to Rob. A metal cover, as promised. Of the Living Daylights.
of Living Daylights.
Yeah. It's the only one of the ones tonight, I'm afraid, that I could find a metal cover of. Always said, it's a good song. So you can do different versions of it. This is by a group called The Narrow. It's not as death metal. Just to warn you, Rob, sorry. It's not Christopher Lee, Steve. Very wrong.
Yeah. Massively.
Here we go. Oh.
I like that, actually.
Yeah.
It's good, isn't it? Yeah. Hey, driver, where we going? I swear my nerves are showing. Set my hopes up way too high. A bit more Western, isn't it? A bit more American.
It is, yeah. It's very John Bon Jovi around Dry County.
Yeah, yeah. Dry Stockport County.
Oh, no, this works. This is, we always talk about this. Once a song is written, it's good in any genre.
Yeah. Well, Chris is going to
I don't mind this, but it's almost like the singer sounds too much like the guy from Aha.
I wonder if
he had a rougher voice, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit, yeah. Not quite emo, is it? Post emo.
Yeah.
Like the weight on the guitar, though.
But at least it's different. They've done something a bit different, so don't mind.
Yeah, I'm for this. I won't let my wife walk down the aisle to it, but I Chris, I thought you were going. You had something. Some
I'm worried. Yeah.
Yeah. I just.
No. Too polite.
There's nothing, Chris. Chris has got nothing left.
I'm speechless.
I wish you were. That's a joke.
Oh dear. Hi, this is Andrei Sushnievsky, and you're listening to Really 007.
Three massive songs for the album. Where's Everybody Gone? First appears, of course, Necros in his headphones, and automatically you're like, this is incredible. And then to have a song like that, we actually said to Andreas when we interviewed him that, but we had, okay, first of all, you had the Spectre theme in From Russia With Love, and then Odd Job was the first character to sort of have his own cue. I don't know any other character in the Bond series who's had his own song and, you know, instrumental version of it as well. It's just, I mean, imagine, I've said it. Just going to the cinema without knowing what you're going to expect the full-edited version to see. I know he knew it, of course, because he said he had the song to listen to, I think, even when he was filming it, which is incredible. At the Prater. Prater. Yes. But it's just... And they use some of the themes in the instrumental tracks. It's in some of them. Mm-hmm. And it's also used in...
It is a great track. And I listened to an interview with him. I really liked that. And it was... He's quite memorable, you know, for a henchman. A lot of look at the guy in there. Let's just Tomorrow Never Dies. I can't remember what his name is, but you know, with the blonde hair, he's just kind of forgettable. He's just a yes, that's the one. Kind of forgettable, but he wasn't forgettable at all. He made that, and to have his own song. I mean, that would be my ringtone. If I was him, that would be my ringtone. Surely that's his ringtone.
Yeah. I just said I'd have his ringtone as his blood curdling scream. I think at the end.
Oh yeah, that's.
Such a nice sound.
Particularly the instrumental version of the synth. It's used in all the fight with Green 4, which is again one of the best fights, not involving Bond or in the whole series. And then it's used again, isn't it, at the Prater when Saunders is killed. And it's used briefly then, sort of when Bond chases him. And then obviously for the in-flight fight at the end, and it's. It's just incredible, isn't it? It really is.
It's, you know what? It's interesting how, going back to what I said about, you know, you can't, orchestrations don't change, they don't date. But it's interesting that Barry, having said everything I said, I'm now going to undo it all, because Barry managed to sort of keep with the times. And that's quite remarkable when you think just how far back he started. You know, most musicians, you know, even really good ones, you know, the guys from the Beatles and the Stones or whatever, but they develop their sound, and all right, they move around a little bit with it, but it's always kind of their sound going forward. But he managed to completely adapt to meet the demands of the viewing public and what they were into at the time, whilst keeping it within a classy piece of music. But he did change, you know. He must have been very much out there listening to what was around and what was good and what wasn't good and what would work. And that's an incredible skill, isn't it? I can't think of many people who, for such a long period managed to adapt to the styles without ever selling himself out. It was always Barry music.
You
know what I mean? And the Living Daylights and A View to a Kill, great examples, I think, of that.
You could look right through his catalogue for Bond and see those notes, see that fingerprint. I'm sorry, again, it's that word, isn't
it?
His fingerprint on Bond is so grand.
It's like getting your sort of main hook. There's a melody hook, then there's like an espionage hook, which is often used with Koskov in the film, and then of course this Necros film, which is like one of the action themes, and then we've got the beautiful If There Was a Man, the Kara sort of theme, which is more on the vein of Wine with Stace, isn't it? Particularly when it's played on the flute. I think it's lovely, this song, I really do, and the production on the single's very good as well. Fantastic song.
Yeah, very much so. I've seen the music video for this one, Tom.
Yeah, is it? An awful lot happens, is it?
I haven't seen this one.
Yeah, no, it's in like, it looks like a kid's papier-mâché beehive wandering around it. So it's an interesting set, and it's got stills from the film, and if I was at Dalton turning round, man, you know, that kind of thing. And it's all
for the ladies.
It's very much... and this particular gentleman.
And the men, yeah.
It's very much a movie music video, you know, with shots in, and each of the, you know, like that, I'm thinking of a beehive now, but the arcs of a beehive, if you draw them up to human height, they have wispy curtains between the arcs, and on those are projected images of Dalton doing Dalton things, diving off, you know, down to the rock and stuff like that. Yeah, so... Yeah. But again, it's a good... the production on the song is like... I miss this level of production in songs. That kind of... And I don't know how to describe it because I'm not enough of a music scholar to know what this is. But it's when songs feel like they're deep and that you could fall into them and the texture that is in your ears. And I don't know how to explain that. But it's just like that song has it, you know, definitely.
It's got stakes.
Yeah.
It goes up a level for the bridge,
We like that.
Really want to sing it now, but don't quite have the guts.
Do like a bridge.
Well, the piano is always lovely as well, on, and it's just got that little sort of soft beat in the background. A bit like If You Ask Me To on License to Kill. It's that sort of soft, lovely adult contemporary again. it's such a nice song. Again, I don't know how well known it is. You don't really hear Bond fans talking about it much. At all, weirdly.
It's all Surrender, or No Surrender, or whatever.
Yeah, Surrender's the only one that seems to... Yeah, the secondary song.
And you know, I like Surrender. K.D. Lang was in Tomorrow Never Dies. I like it. I personally prefer it to the Tomorrow Never Dies song. A weird thing is I love Sheryl Crow. I've got loads of her stuff, and I was watching her on one of these concerts that was on during lockdown. I thought she was phenomenal, but weirdly, I don't particularly like her voice on that song.
Okay, well...
It just doesn't feel like... Her Rob kind
will,
of song.
Will argue, I think.
there's so much to discuss here.
There's
a naughty twinkle in my eye.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna keep my powder dry because I know there's another song coming tonight. So I'm not going to say.
Oh heck yeah.
Is that like your revenge?
No, we've got on so well so far.
Steve, while we've been talking, I've been texting the other really 007 lads, like, this guy's wife walked down to the aisle. And they're literally like, how could we love him more? You know, like, so
it's all about to change. No, it's not. So we've talked about some amazing Bond films, Spy You Love Me and Living Daylights, some of them are the classic ones we love the most, and we'll finish with one of the all-time can't even get through this without just laughing. Anyway, basically we're going to discuss I can't work out which is more hated, the song or the film of Quantum of Solace. Like all the songs we're doing tonight, or most of them, it isn't called what the title is. Of course, it's Another Way to Die, which again sounds like No Time to Die. It's an Tomorrow Never Dies. It's an identikit Bond name, isn't it? But Quantum of Solace is a short story.
That's right.
Anyway, Steve, I don't know what anyone's going to say tonight. I think that
right.
It might be a bit more positive than you think. I don't know.
Right. Okay. I'll set my stall out. I totally understand why people might not like this, but I think it's a great track. I absolutely love it. And when I did the whole thing, introducing my wife to Bond and we watched them all, this was another track that she absolutely loved. You know, it's gritty, it's rocky, it's modern, it's fresh, but it's still, for me, it's got, there's highs and lows in it. It's not just in your face. You'll have to remind me the one for Casino Royale because it's so forgettable. I can never remember what it's called.
Wow.
I love the
Bond fans love it.
You know my name.
Yeah.
You forgot my name.
To me, that is just it's just one level of noise at you, and it just does nothing for me at all. Which is a shame because I think, as I say, it's not my kind of Bond film, but I think it's a good film. But I think this is a great track in Quantum of Solace. And I'm probably going too far. I'm kind of saying it's great because I know you're all going to shout me down. Yeah. So I thought if I start quite high, I've got room to fall. Because it's not great in the league of The Living Daylights or Nobody Does It Better or One or Two or View to a Kill and a couple of others we can mention. It's not. I'm not going to have you there. But I think it's better than quite a few. I think it's better than Tomorrow Never Dies. And I think it's better than any other Daniel. Well, the Adele one's grown on me. I found it a bit boring at the time. It's grown on me. Better than any other Daniel Craig song, with the Adele one. Yeah, okay, just about to take that. But it's just fresh and different. As for the film, do you know, it's the first Bond film that I didn't go and see at the cinema since I've been old enough to go to the cinema. So I remember vividly seeing License to Kill. I think I probably was there for Living Daylights and A View to Kill when I was only a little lad. But I've seen them all since then. But I didn't see Quantum. I was trying to work out why. And thinking back, I would have had a couple of month old boy.
Oh, right, okay.
I had a 2 year old girl at the time. Yeah. And I think, and I'd seen Casino Royale, which hadn't left me.
That's the main reason.
Get back and see
the
next Bond installment. I'm not gonna put a big downer on Daniel Craig because I think, you know, Eon did something and they've done something which I think has actually probably meant the franchise will continue for a long time to come. And I just hope that it moves back into a direction that I enjoy more. But I think it probably needed this just to, you know, to go in a different direction. It's obviously been hugely successful, and if it means Bond keeps going and it means there's a chance for more films that are more up my street in the future, then I think that's great. And Daniel Craig clearly, you know, cared deeply about the films, and they haven't all worked out how we would want. But so I'm not going to put a big downer on it. And actually, I'll tell you what, I watched Quantum of Solace the other night. My plan was only to watch it up until the end of the credits so I could remind myself of you know, the music and the way it fits within that film. And I ended up watching the whole movie and it flies past. It is so flipping fast paced. It's got almost no dialogue in it. I don't know how the actors got paid because there's so few lines in it. It's remarkable. Nice. I mean, honestly, you could have had Daniel Craig's script on about 3 pages, but it flies by. It's frantically edited. And I quite like the set pieces. I love the stuff with the Aston Martin being chased by the Alfa Romeos that kicks it off. I love that thing where the you know, it's revealed that even the security guard who's working for MI6 is one of the bad guys. And this is when we still don't know who this group is before it all gets completely ruined in Spectre. And I think it's a decent film and it's short.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Even if you don't like Daniel Craig films, it's over much quicker than any of the others. That's got to be a good thing.
I love how harrowing that must be, if that's a positive, that it's not very long. Yeah. You don't have to endure it for that much period of time.
Do you know, I think you could, and in all seriousness, for me, it's probably in some ways the closest of his four films feels to a Bond film to
Absolutely.
Me.
Absolutely.
If only it used the Bond music more. Like, you imagine that bit where the plane's rocketing up into the sky, it's on fire, it's falling apart, and they're going to do that amazing parachute jump. And I was reading about how Mark Forster filmed that, and fair credit, he actually had them in some kind of wind tunnel thing to film them. You know, it wasn't just CGI, it was amazing. They actually were being held up in the air by these massive air jets. Great stuff. But it needed the Bond theme. And I almost am tempted, I mean, I've got an edit suite at home, I'm tempted to edit my own version with the Bond theme in it, in key places. What I can't do is my one other change, which would be to get Daniel Craig to just look like he's enjoying it. And he's so somber. Now, I know Vesper's dead and he's upset about it. But as I said, even when you're mourning, you are not down all the time. And it just needed that bit of lightness. Have the shadow, have the dark. He's obviously down. He's angry and all that stuff. Great. But hey, so was Roger Moore in For Your Eyes Only when he was at the Cemetery. You know, and he still got on and had a great time. But yeah, I get that they wanted dark, but it just feels to me it's a bit relentless. You just give us a smile, give us a... I'm not saying do one-liners, that's not Daniel Craig's thing, but they could have worked the Timothy Dalton humour into it, you know, make the humour within the scenes themselves. You can watch a serious film and it can make you laugh when... Because life's full of naturally funny things happening. Put that into the film. That does happen in life. So if it had just been had a little bit of humour in it, a little bit of that human touch and the Bond theme coming in at key places... I would actually have thought Quantum of Solace would fit quite well with being a Bond film compared to the others, which to me don't really feel like Bond films.
I agree with you, Steve.
Come on.
No.
Shoot me all down. I'll lean back. I'll take it. I'm a big man. I can take it.
I'll be nice as well for a bit, and then I'll let Chris and Rob dive in. But I think it was the first one where I was like, I am actually not looking forward to going to watch at the cinema. After Casino Royale was so... Yes, you know, with repeated viewings now, I can appreciate it as a good film, in inverted commas, but it wasn't what we wanted as a Bond film. We're going to do a, you know, 10-hour review on it or whatever to go into more depth, but just the whole Dying of the Day was not what we wanted, but it doesn't mean it had no redeeming qualities and we'd go completely different. Anyway, so going into Quantum of Solace, I was a bit... And the first time I watched it, I was so underwhelmed. And the second time I watched it, I was really underwhelmed. And then I saw it maybe 18 months ago. I don't think I'd seen it for, 10 years, whatever. And it was like, yeah, I actually think it was quite well-structured. You know, that one of the main complaints about it is the editing. But I didn't think that was that bad, the editing. I thought it went by pretty quickly. It probably needed another half an hour of, like you say, a bit more character development in terms of Dominic Green could have had a few more scenes. They could have had henchmen, apart from Elvis, of course. I just thought it's the one out of the Craigs that felt the most Bond, in that it was quite grounded, but he went to these amazing places. It wasn't all about him. You know, there's more focus on CIA stuff and Dominic Green. And Green is quite... I think he's quite a decent baddie. Obviously, he's a bit of a slimy, you know, get or whatever, but... he's not got the charisma, but he made an impression anyway. Yeah, I don't know. There's a chance it's possibly my favourite of the Craigs, maybe. And that's so weird. And that's only... I've seen it again since with Jennifer, and... Yeah. I don't know. I did quite like it. I love the opera bit. I think that's really good. I like the bullfighting and all that. There's loads you could criticize.
I quite like the fight there. That fight scene where they're coming down. And they're trying to grab the gun. You know.
Yeah, that's decent. Yeah. Cool. Before we talk the song, I'll let Chris and Rob just put their two penneth in.
It's been a long time since I've seen it, and I think I don't know. I will have to get around to watching it again, but I saw it at the cinema. When I saw Casino Royale, I was like, oh, this is quite an interesting kind of take. You know, there's some good stuff in there. Like I say, Martin Campbell really knows his stuff. It's interesting, you know, the fact that they got the rights back, you know, for the film, for the original novel and that kind of thing. So I enjoyed it. I came out of it. But I thought that was going to be it. It was going to be like, he says the line, the next one is just going to be standalone. And then I read, actually it continues, you know, 20 minutes after the end of that. I was like, oh, that's interesting, you know, we'll see what it is. And I agree, the opening sequence is, for me, is probably the best thing about the film. That the way it's edited, the car chase with the Alphas and the Aston Martin is really great. You know, the sense of, you know, who to trust, who is this big organisation. You know, I can't believe they threw that all away, you know, in the last one. It's ridiculous. You know, Mr. White is this kind of really intriguing character. You know, the fact that you've got basically moles and double agents all through, you know, Western
people
society,
everywhere.
These groups that are hell bent. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's Spectre, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I came out with it, you know, thinking it felt thin, it felt light. It was quite clear that this was made during a writer's strike, that there was no real characterization. It was... Yeah, there just wasn't a huge amount to it outside of the action. Not a great deal. I didn't hate it. I was just really underwhelmed. And that was it, really. I'd be interested to see whether my opinion of it changes, you know, going back and watching it again. To see, you know, I suppose, in the context of, you know, two other, you know, Daniel Craig films that followed it, you know, where does that sit? Was it actually, you know, the editing and you know, the choices are quite daring, I suppose. And maybe your initial instinct sometimes is like, oh, no, I don't like change, you know, and it's like, this doesn't feel like a Bond film. But actually, when you look back at, like, you know, from Dr. No onwards, the filmmaking is very dynamic. The filmmaking is often, you know, groundbreaking. So yeah, I'm you know, I'm on the fence when it comes to this, and I'll definitely report back when I find some time to watch it. But the problem is, it's like you get the box set out, and it's all like, oh yeah, yeah. I'll give that one a go. No, actually, I'll watch, you know, Living Daylights again.
Absolutely.
For context,
to put this rage
when I bought the when I bought the Blu-ray, you know, that lovely white Blu-ray set that has all of them together. It's in three boxes. There's 62 to 73, possibly, I think, and then it's bracketed up there to. Yeah, to 2002. I took the last four films out and said, I don't need these. And I put them to one side. So my children don't know that the Bond franchise goes on from 2002.
It's not for them, to be fair, is it?
This is sort of like... No, it's not for them. No. I was so disillusioned after Casino Royale. Again, great film. Great film by the standards of filmmaking, but it's just not my Bond. It's not my Bond. It's not what I wanted out of a James Bond film. I'm not saying that my opinion is right. It was just from the very, very nostalgic corner of me that was very excited about a new Bond film. I didn't get that from Casino Royale. I got a great action film, a great spy thriller, and a lot of card scenes. Yeah.
Bond's ego.
But, yeah. Right, so, I know, but we'd, as a family, we'd made it a point of going to see every Bond film at the cinema. My mum and dad and the kids, and we stopped at Quantum of Solace. We watched it in the cinema and we just said, well, that's enough of that. We're not going to do that again. And we've never watched a Bond film together again since then. And that should... I think, so I'm not the best person to ask about A Quantum of Solace because I'm not sure I've seen it in its entirety since that day in 2008. So I don't know. What I do remember it being extremely well made.
You've not seen it since the day it shattered your family.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
you're not able to face it.
Yeah. Being a good review.
I've seen a handful of scenes
with John Barry's music on.
No. Well, no. I've watched Dominic Green axe himself in the foot. I've never watched it all the way through.
So, you know, what more do you want?
Yeah, but it was just—I mean, I remember watching, like, in the cinema, sitting there watching the Mathis bin scene and going, "This franchise is dead. This franchise is dead to me now." and that was it. And I called it then. It was like, you know, like a post-mortem, like the doctor, like, we've got no pulse, it's over. You know, that kind of thing. And I've never looked at it the same way since. And it was only, this is genuinely the truth, it was only when Tom said, would you like to be involved in Really 007 last year, that I started looking back at the Bond films and it reignited my love of it because it had been absolutely crushed by what went on here. And that is, I'm not saying this is right. This is the reaction of an absolute weirdo. It really is not normal to behave in this way. But that is the regard that I held these films and this franchise. That when I saw the hero, bin his mate and rob him.
Robbing him, that's crucial.
I was done. It's crucial, yeah, robs him and then bins him. But anyway, the point is we're talking about here is I would like to give it another chance. I would like to, you know, I can't, because I want to think that there's life after No Time to Die. I want to think, to be honest, I cannot wait for No Time to Die to get here, simply because I think that era is over with No Time to Die, and then we can move on. I don't think that No Time to Die is going to change my opinion of anything that's gone on. I think what Craig and the producers have done, I think what you said before, Steve, about this has given life to the franchise, is absolutely right. They've made absolute bank here, to quote the TikTok generation. And they will be able to put that. I mean, they've probably made $4 billion off of Craig's films by the time we get to this, and we haven't even counted this one yet. So they can do all sorts going forward. It's whether they want to go forward in a way that is in the spirit of everything that's gone before. Again, not saying it's right, but whether they want to go forward in a, ooh, let's do it as dark and contemporary as we possibly can. I don't know. But I'm growing up. I'm not closed-minded. I would like to watch Quantum of Solace again. And to see, you know, I would like to, because I haven't seen the bin scene since it scratched its way into my nightmares.
I actually, with Mathis, I've got a bigger problem with the Mathis character than the bin scene.
Mm.
It's the fact that he's just suddenly a goodie, and that's all glossed over. It's glossed over in one line. Yeah, it turns out he was innocent. Yeah. He bought my villa.
Yeah.
Now, what? Hang on. Didn't we just buy into the story of the last film?
Yeah, don't trust anyone.
Yeah.
Totally agree. It's the same with Jeffrey Wright in the trailer for the new one. Brother, you're the only one I trust. Yeah. Like, why?
He's got no relationship.
Why would you trust this?
Not seen you in 12 years.
Moody git who quits at the quickest opportunity. Why would you trust him?
And that's just Felix.
Yeah. I wouldn't trust him to post a letter at the post box.
I mean, it seems to me they wrote Quantum of Solace and they literally thought, well, we need someone that people can associate from Daniel Craig's Bond in the past that we can bring back, that we can then kill off so that we feel more sorry for Bond. Yeah, but the only people who aren't dead from the last film are Judi Dench, we can't kill her off yet, or that Mathis guy. Yeah, but he was a baddie. Yeah, but that was in that film. In this film, he's going to be a goodie. And they went, yeah, that's actually a good idea because he's a decent actor. Box ticked, well done. Now, that to me is far more offensive to your viewers, your people paying to see a film, than actually him putting him in a bin. Because him putting him in a bin, yeah, it's tasteless. But as we said earlier about the way he treats women in some of the earlier films, you know, the violence, right. He's doing what a spy would do in that situation. And it's not nice to watch because it shouldn't be done for entertainment.
But it's the count. I think I could actually see, you know, like we always talk about that thing, and we've talked about it a few times, like, could you see Roger Moore's Bond binning his mate and robbing him?
No, I couldn't.
But I definitely could see the Bond in the Andrea Anders scene in Golden Gun.
Yeah.
Do it, but with some heart. I definitely could see that, because there was no heart to it, you know. Yeah. Again, I find this with the Bond character that they've created, I have to talk about this, I think. But there was a Twitter poll recently of, you know, which is the better scene in Bond?
Oh, dear, I know what you're going to say.
Moment at the end of Casino Royale where he says, you know, he shoots Mr. White in the leg and says, Bond, James Bond. Or the scene where, Tracy gets shot in at the end of Her Majesty's Secret Service. And it's like, is this a choice? Is this a genuine thing that we have to choose?
Where was this? Where did you see this? Where was this?
I'm not going to name the Twitter account, but it was on there. Just so in Bond Twitter. Yeah. No. It was on in Bond Twitter. And I thought about it. It's like, because my rule is I'm not going to fall out with anyone on Twitter. I will never do that because so many people end up in that predicament. I just don't want to do that. I see it as a chance to connect with really cool people who are into the same stuff as me, and we just have a chat and it's lovely. So I don't want to fall out with anybody. But I said, like, is this... Right, so you've got one which sort of Bond sort of kills... Bond harms a minor character in a minor place versus Bond's wife gets murdered and it influences the destiny of that character for the rest of the franchise. Is that the decision we're trying to make?
And it was winning, wasn't it?
But this is the regard that the... This is the regard that the Craig era films have with people. And I can't argue with that. I can't argue with it. It's not my bag, but I cannot argue with it. I don't even know where I was going with it. I've got no idea.
It's a really good point. I mean, out of interest, I've heard some of you talk about your favourite Bond films and your least favourites. But for you guys, just paint the picture. Are the four Craig films your bottom four, or do any of them come higher up? For me, they're not actually... The Bond film I hate the most is Die Another Day. And then it's all the Craig films. I absolutely cannot stand Die Another Day. I can't watch it. Actually, I literally can't watch it. I could take the DVD out of the box and throw away. Because when I watched it again with my wife, which was, I think, the first time since the cinema, so a long time after I'd gone to see it, 15 years or something. And I thought, you know what? It isn't going to be that bad. Because it can't be as bad as... And I just... the thing that winds me up most about it, I think the thing... No, there's lots of things. But one of the things that winds me up most is it goes against the principles of what the Bond producers had said. If you can't do something for real, we don't do it. And that's what made it different to all the other superhero films and action films.
Yeah.
If you can't do it for real, you don't do it. And that film is full of people stuck on in CGI or animation, call it what you will, it's basically cartoon. It is not done for real. And that, for me, it was a huge problem. And then there's the cringing scene where Bond chats, I'm going to say chats up Halle Berry in that bar.
Just, Rob's favourite scene?
My skin is crawling. Don't.
You'll never forget it, though, will you?
I think...
Iconic scene.
No, I won't ever. I'll never.
Herbert and Wade.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if someone actually spoke to a woman like that who's just come out the sea?
Slapped.
You would get slapped and arrested. Yeah. Quite right.
What did he because say also, to you, my lord? Ornithology.
And by that time, and I don't want to be ageist, because Pierce was younger than Roger, but I don't think he quite aged as well as Roger. He's looking quite like a slightly older man. And I think he still carries it off as a spy, but he doesn't carry it off as the sort of young, cheeky chap who could say that kind of thing to a young woman who's just come out the sea in a bikini or in the water.
Yeah, the maniac sort of uncle at the kid's birthday party who says something awful.
And he's got the beard as well.
Not be allowed.
Robinson Crusoe.
And on that, I can understand why the Bond makers went a different route. That film made a truckload of money as well.
Basically,
Bond films I don't like make an absolute truckload of money. So, Eon, don't listen to anything I say.
A License to Kill made the least.
You would be
ruined.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Oh, gosh. We'll go back to Another Way to Die. Yeah, I have remembered. I think the bottom four, to be fair, it wasn't, because we do have people other than us doing our... We did a joint, you know, we each voted for our top, you know, in order, and I sort of managed to do a calculation. I think I've still got it here. And bottom was Quantum of Solace. Only just, Spectre was just about, you know... Just about beat it. I won't say beat it.
I'm convinced if you watch them again, Spectre would be lower than Quantum.
Yeah, I know. I agree. I agree with that.
Probably.
I
think,
For this reason alone, there are more minutes of Spectre than there are of Quantum of Solace.
But again, I've not seen Spectre since I watched it the first time.
And you only saw that. Called it a day then, you didn't see it at the cinema, did you, Rob? I remember.
Can't really argue. Couldn't face it.
I enjoy it. I enjoyed the opening sequence, and I did think Daniel Craig played it a bit more like I want to see him play Bond. But the most of the film, certainly from the halfway point onwards, or even less than that, three quarters of the film onwards, is just...
It's the most offensive.
It's just so annoying that they... The one good idea they've had in the Craig thing was then utterly ruined.
Still better than most films? No. Yeah, the bottom. So we had those two, and then Dine of the Day was third bottom, and then Diamonds Are Forever. And it's not.
I don't think it's a terrible film.
No.
No, but I think it's actually a decent-ish film until about the last half an hour, where it all goes a bit wonky and cheap and nasty.
Hi, I'm Rob.
I'm Simon.
And I'm James.
We want to talk about those movies. Those supposedly bad movies. Those movies that bombed.
To see if they weren't that bad, after all, join us every other Tuesday on the For Your Reconsideration podcast, part of the Pod Dojo podcast network.
You can catch us on iTunes, Spotify, and all your usual podcast apps.
And it won't cost you a solitary bean, mate.
It's like it's free.
It's just like it's free.
But yes, Another Way to Die. So, I again, a bit like the four... Well, okay, we'll say the five now, Craig. I actually think this is the most musically different out of the five. I do really like You Know My Name. I do think it's quite Bond. I like the rock element, and it's got David Arnold's score, of course. I think that's the last one, isn't it, that's bothered to use a composer. So that score is in the film. I know, like, the Sam Smith bit is used after the fact, as is Skyfall, but they're all fairly safe. Put a little few of the odd Bondian notes in. Very slow, no percussion, all orchestra, and No Time to Die. It just doesn't go anywhere for me. Anyway, we'll discuss that another time. The song. This starts brilliantly for me. And then, yeah, the problems, as John, I think, another guy on here, he really wanted to talk about this. I'm sure he will do anyway, but his issue is just it needed someone other than Jack White to produce it. It needed someone to basically put them in the right key for the... and all that. but it's just... dear me, what? Because those opening crunching guitars, they're so effective, they're so Bond, and they're pretty... That's what I want, you know, that's what you'd want from a Bond thing. And the verses, okay, it's a bit bassy, but it's still pretty decent. And then So most of it, I don't know, I can't picture just putting it on like, oh yeah, I'd love to hear that. That's where it probably doesn't rate as highly, but I don't... It's not boring like a lot of the recent ones. I think it's musically decent until the point. Go on, Chris. Mm-hmm.
No, I was just going to say in the context of, you know, one is a duet.
Yeah, it's the only one.
We've never had that before. They obviously got Jack White. I know you said Jack Black.
Yeah, I did. I was thinking that. He could do a song, of course, couldn't he?
Jack White.
He's doing a Bond. his whole background is in, you know, raw kind of blues infused rock. You know, everything he does, he produces everything. You know, it's all analog.
Football chants as well. Boxing actually now as well.
Is it?
Sorry.
I think for me, it doesn't come as a surprise that it's like that it's not in the right key. You know, the drumming from the, you know, the White Stripes is always slightly off, isn't it? That's his thing, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's not quite hitting the mark. And sort of, I don't know if that makes you listen to it more or less. I don't know. But like I say, the fact that it's a duet, that, you know, this analog bluesy thing. The vocals, are all over the place. But for me, it kind of sits with, you know, like suppose like Live and Let Die, that it's completely left field. You know, I would never have, if you hadn't heard it and you sat down and this started playing, you'd be like, what on earth am I listening to? But at least they are going, let's try do something different. And if you look at Skyfall, which is highly regarded, for me, is
Oscars
there's nothing to it.
Yeah.
You know, and the other one, I can't even remember what it's called, is a non-entity. Again, it's music whistled by, you know, and then someone wrote it down, and then it was produced in half an hour, and then it was kind of like...
Yeah, he said that, didn't he?
And that was it. I think, you know, Another Way to Die is all over the place, but it's, I suppose it's daring and it's different and it's not to everyone's taste, but then why should it be? At least they're trying to go, and I'm not, you know, I have to admit, I'm not a fan of the Casino Royale song. I find it
famously,
for me, it doesn't sound like a Bond song, but I don't hate it, you know. But I think At Least Another Way to Die is an attempt to do something. And there are some lovely moments, like with the horns and the trumpets come in. You know, listening back to it today, I thought, actually, there's some, you know, he's... It feels like he is taking on board Bond, the Bond theme, and the baggage that comes with it. And he's just interpreted it his own way. Again, it's not to everyone's taste, but, you know, I say it doesn't have to be, does it, every single time?
I'm just waiting. No, no, I don't think Rob has over. Rob has no words.
Hear me? Is it still on?
Rob's warming up.
I thought your summary was astonishingly good. I was like, I wish I'd said that stuff. All I kept saying was, it's great.
I really like it.
You got that.
It's a bit odd, isn't it, that you've got Alicia Keys and you don't get her to play the piano, as far as I'm aware. You don't get her to sing, write the song. But again, was it presumably Jack White was on board and then, oh, I'll get Alicia Keys to join?
She plays piano in the video for it.
So, oh, yeah, she does.
She proves she can play those notes.
Yeah. Well, Harry, our brother who's on the podcast as well, he's seen her live a couple of times. And he does say it's like quite a nice, pleasant... It's not like her normal song. It's not like a normal song. And Pete, the fans love it, and it's a real out-of-your-seat moment. So, you know, I suppose he's not on it then, but I don't know. I don't mind his singing on it.
I quite like the you know, it has those quiet moments with the piano and then it comes back at you. And actually, that's a bit of a theme of the film with the sound editing, because obviously, because of the fast pace, the sound is very full on at you. But then you'll notice when you watch it again, if you suffer it again, they drop the sound. I'm looking at you, Rob. he will just drop the sound out. And it has such impact because it's such a loud film. It happens the first time in the Alfa Romeo chase, so one of the Alfa Romeos goes off the cliff, and instead of having the explosion or the crescendo music, he actually does the reverse. He goes silent, and you, a bit like a parachute jump, but a bit condensed. And he does that actually in the film a couple of times, and because it's such a noisy film, there's quite a lot of impact when you take the sound away all of a sudden. And I think that happens with the theme song as well, is that you've got a lot of noise in it, and then it will suddenly come back, and you get a bit of a range, which I think is nice. Whether they intended it to tie in with the film in that way, I'm going to say they did, because I'd like to give them credit. Probably not, but you never know.
I think today is the first time I've listened to the song in a very long time without hearing a snippet, you know, in like The Distance or whatever, or
the X Factor adverts.
And to be honest, I mean, I've no idea what context I would hear this, because it's not got any sort of earworm quality that would mean that it's used in ads or anything like that. But and obviously, I've not seen Quantum since in the cinema. So sorry, I all feel dirty for calling it Quantum. I listened to it today, and I was blown away initially by how Bond it felt at the beginning, with the really heavy chords and heavy guitar, and how much I felt like it was trying to sit in the Live and Let Die tradition, and I was enjoying it a lot until anybody spoke. And then I just, like, as soon as another there was any vocal, I just, but like, you've got, right, so the Bond gig is it's invitation only, essentially, isn't it? Like, you can pick people, you can pick anybody. I don't know how anyone... Make a point when I go on any public appearance that I don't do anything negative, but how did anyone look at the two voices and go, these two people will go together well? Because for me, they just don't in any possible way. And then I think I can only think that because they're both brilliant vocalists, so I don't know how on this they don't work. I don't know. I can only imagine it's deliberate. And if you're deliberately making something untuneful and that doesn't work, you're being disrespectful to what it is you're supposed to be adding to. Honestly, that is the vocals in this it's hard to say it without it sounding disrespectful, but they are absolutely appalling. And no, I just can't find anything enjoyable or with merit in what I'm listening to here. I really can't.
Think of Rob in the cinema, you know. he's not up for it, and then you get this song at the beginning that's absolutely offensive. Get Daniel Craig sulky around in the title sequence.
Family crush, you know.
Yeah, Mathis, and then it's like, that is it, I'm sorry.
I can't. Because Bond music is so massive to me too, you know. And then this just like going from that original chord progression. Like I remember the first time I heard it was like, it was on Radio 1 and they were like, we're going to debut the James Bond song tonight at da-da-da. You know, it's going to be amazing. We're going to be there. It's Alicia Keys and Jack White. You are going to be blown away. And I remember tuning in and going like, is this an absolute joke? Is this a joke? Is this a prank? Am I on Beatles About?
honestly, no MTV. No
honestly, spots, I think that... yeah, is Ashton Kutcher going to jump out with punk? You know, that was
you've been exed, punk. Yeah.
Contemporary reference.
The Jamie Kennedy show. Like,
there is an amazing song in this mess. There is.
Yeah.
And it's nothing to do with the music. It's the production of the vocals that I think are just so wild away out there and off that I cannot believe this passed muster. I truly know. I can't believe that this song was played to the Broccolis, and especially that. I cannot believe that they went like, "Yeah, that's good. Yeah, we'll do that." Yeah, I cannot understand it.
Do you wonder? You know, like John Barry did the lyrics for Honor Majesty's Secret Service, and then of course they didn't use the lyrics. Do you think that Barbara Broccoli was thinking, "Do you know what? We love the music. Dare we say to Jack White and Alicia Keys that, do you know what, we're going to just take the music because we love it, but we're just not going to use your voice bit. We're just happy because we love the music."
But don't think you would have gone down,
we know Alicia Keys can sing.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but you did that to John Barry in View to a Kill. You said you're not doing that bit. They're going to do that bit. I can't. Because they can sing. They can do this. Why was someone allowed to do that? I've no idea. Anyway.
It's funny, because I like... it's weird how you hear things different. And I hear that it sounds awkward and uncomfortable. And I completely get that. And as I said at the very start, I can understand why.
And I'm no music aficionado, Steve. I'm not at all.
Well, you don't have to be, everybody has equal opinion on music. It's just an art, isn't it? And... I think everybody's as valid as anybody else. And for me, I like it. And it's weird because I hear you talk and I can exactly hear what you're saying and why it makes you sort of uncomfortable listening to those vocals. I quite like it. I think it suits the feel of the film. But
It does.
But isn't it? You know what's great is that it gives us something to talk about.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's interesting rather than boring. You can't call that song boring, and
absolutely.
Perhaps
that's, which side of the fence you are, perhaps that's at least a positive. It'd be like what you were saying there, Chris, that at least they were trying something a bit different, and they were trying to respect the Bond thing but be a bit different, and it clearly didn't quite succeed in the way that Live and Let Die did when Paul McCartney and Wings reinvented the theme, but yeah.
But I do feel they were so close, though. They were really close to something really cool here.
Yeah, that's frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah,
when you get that close,
it
then it's
could
not
have been
quite.
Like, I just, yeah.
Do you think, though, if Babs and Michael G. Wilson's faces, when they saw it, when they heard it, they were like, oh my word, right, we're going safe, we're going so safe with Adele the next time, we're going to have a babyish Batsy cover. Please, none of that again. I don't know.
Do you think they sort of, whoever finds these people, they just said, who is the safest artist
in
the world? It's Adele. Yes.
Yeah.
She's safe. Yeah. Yeah.
Very
and
safe.
She can sing in tune, right?
I mean, I remember you used to get easy listening in HMV, the easy listening racks. I don't know if they had a safe rack, but you'd definitely have Adele there, wouldn't you, in the safe rack.
Oh yeah. Your mum and dad will love
Adele, because she is unbelievable.
No, she's great.
She's in the safe rack.
Yeah.
It's not a bad song. It's just
of course no,
it's not as daring, is it? It's the
I'm
Living
Daylights. I'm a Skyfall song defender. You know, I think it's a great song. Okay. I like No Time to Die as well.
Good. See, it's not. Maybe we don't all hate the Craig here.
To Tomorrow Never Dies.
Yeah.
Not too. Well, no. It's just all dead to me. That's all.
Hey, I'd give you a thought for when you do watch Quantum of Solace. And I don't know why this came into my head. It shows you I'm a slightly twisted, weird person. But I don't know why, but when I was watching Dominic Green, Dominic Green's character, Dominic Green,
the villain
this time, the British comedy actor David Mitchell came into my head. And I don't know why.
I just saw
him as David Mitchell. And then I could not get it out of my head. And then when he gets the limp, it was even more David Mitchell shuffling along, feeling sorry for himself. So that might help you, Rob, when you watch it. He's David Mitchell. Imagine David Mitchell playing that role in typical David Mitchell style.
I love Peep Show, so yeah, this will work.
Yeah, but do you want the guy Peep Show as your main villain? I don't know. It's not exactly Zorin, is it?
Well, yeah.
It's different, but that's fine.
With Dominic Green.
Dear me. Dominic Green, yeah, it sounds too like a real person as well, doesn't it?
Didn't we go to school with him?
Yeah, I'm sure we did, yeah. The video, because the actual title sequence, it's a bit like that. It's on the sand for some reason. There's not much of the film in sand for some reason, is there? Apart from the end? But
well, there's the
really
desert at the end, isn't there? Where
yeah, but it doesn't look like that. Yeah. It looks like the Spy Love Me desert in this. In the film. But it wasn't Daniel Kleiman, it was like the only one he's not done since GoldenEye.
Was it MK12 or something? Yeah, some of that Mark Foster worked with.
AK-47, yeah.
Yeah, some weird. Anyone who's got a name like that, I'm not interested. I mean, they sit in front of the computer too much if they've got a name like that.
Yeah, that was a bit CGI, wasn't it? The video, I think, is of them on the sound, the piano and stuff, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. The video's something and nothing. I mean, at least it looks like they were probably in the same place when they did it.
No.
Yeah.
Tell me it was.
Unlike, this is really sad, it's got nothing to do with anything, I Knew You Were Waiting For Me, the classic George Michael and Aretha Franklin, recorded in different continents. So, never met. Cool. Yeah. Okay. Great song, you never hear it again. But it's not, I guess, number one in America and in England. So, anyway, this was number 9 in the UK, which is not bad these days, but didn't really do very well in America. Did do well in Europe. And I don't know whether Jack White does it live, but like I say, Alicia Keys certainly does it. I wouldn't know.
It was big in Finland, I understand.
Yes, I've seen
Alicia
that, yeah.
Keys first number one in Finland.
First number one in Finland, yeah.
Finland. Yeah.
Big in Japan.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Big in Japan.
Yeah, well. good market.
Please tell me you've uncovered some thrash metal version.
No, right,
maybe
I'm
maybe
so
an easy listening kind of.
I'm
piano,
so sorry, Chris. Know. I spent ages looking for something. Every single cover is exactly the same. It's exactly the same production, and amazingly, less of the in tune stuff. But you thought this is rife for an actual different take, sure, isn't it? But I promise you, I couldn't find anything. I know the Cue the Music, who were like, they did a good version.
Is this a question of, you know, like we always talk about, like, if a song is good, it will go into any genre. People have looked at this song and like, we can't save this. And they don't even
well,
try.
Yeah, so well, you can't be the original, so just do exactly like the original.
Yeah, it's just, we can't think of anything to do with this.
It's a sad way to end, I'm sorry. It's another way to die.
Yeah, but like, But Bond, like being part of the Bond music, being the title Bond track, was like, surely the apex of what you could achieve.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like you got your major musical awards, but also like, right, I was invited to do a Bond song. That is massive, absolutely massive.
But then we go back to the Living Daylights and say, from what I heard from Aha, they weren't bothered. It was no big deal to them. They were young guys.
My God,
he does. A bit of
John Barry now.
Don't
listen to him. You know, it's not very interesting.
but now, because obviously Bond's so massive worldwide. You know, whether we like it or not, I probably agree. It probably is huge again to be asked to do a Bond song.
Oh yeah, yeah.
But it's funny, isn't it?
I know two other names who were asked to do it, and I'm assuming that they weren't asked to do it as a duet. But quite babe, quite who you'd expect at the time, Amy Winehouse and Leona Lewis. Basically, have to be British and have a good voice. But, yeah, I don't. Quite obvious choices.
I'm sure
in some ways.
Of them could have done something.
Yeah.
You just don't know till you hear it, do you?
What's that program where people are given like half a day with a house to turn it round and make it nice? There was a famous TV show. What's it called?
Nick Knowles.
Yeah, Changing Rooms.
Nick Knowles. Changing Rooms, right. Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, Changing Rooms, right. If we were given like the remit of, you, the four of us, we've all been given a Eon Broccoli budget, and we've got to come up with a Bond song for the next Bond film and they give us 2 days. I reckon we could all come up with something pretty.
I thought you say something better than this. So No.
Brackets better than another day. Another way to die.
I can just see the conversation in Eon's headquarters in a few months' time, saying, "So there's these four guys on the podcast. You know what they reckon? They can probably come up with a song actually. If we get a couple of days and we give them a few quid." What do you
do
reckon?
It for free.
Them?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're onto it, Rob. I think you've done it.
Michael, Barbara, hit us up. Seriously. You will have four different versions you can pick.
Quartet.
One. Seriously. Oh. I reckon we can do it.
Same joke.
But in fact, Michael and Barbara, if you want something sung tunelessly, just let me go at it. Just let me go for it. Seriously. Dear. Anyway, sorry. I feel a bit overly negative a little bit here, and I don't want to be. But at the same time, this broke so far from something I was expecting and tradition. Not that tradition is something that I am pandering to, but I at least hope that a song will inspire me, that the film will be good.
And do you think it's less popular? I think it's less popular with Bond fans than just people in general. I don't think casual, viewers of the odd Bond film or music listeners.
I don't think casual listeners know anything about it. It's so forgettable.
I don't think they'd hate
If you're not a Bond fan, you're not going to remember that. I don't think they know about it.
Have you heard of this song?
Something interesting. They obviously have you heard of this song? They try and get, obviously, the young talent that's popular to get the young audience because they think it'll give them good promotion. But as you said, Chris, you said this didn't do brilliantly well in America. I think it's 81. So even by having two of the hottest talents around, you can almost say it didn't chart. It probably was getting no airplay.
The American charts are
based purely on airplay. So to get to 81... So even having... it doesn't make a difference if you go and get the youngest, coolest kids on the block. I almost think they should open their eyes to the fact that, why don't we just get who we think will be brilliant? You know, who would be brilliant for a Bond song? And it doesn't matter if they're 60 years old or if they're 16 years old.
Yeah.
Let's get
and
who
a lot
brilliant.
Of them didn't do unbelievably well at the time. You know, Honor Majesty's, I don't think that charted. We Have All the Time in the World didn't chart until... It was in that Guinness commercial. But now it's like, obviously it's an amazing song. Obviously it's a classic. Even Diamonds Are Forever, the song, it wasn't massive at the time. But what are you making it for? Are you making it for the fans? Are you making it for the commercial aspects? Obviously, when you do get Living Daylights and A View to a Kill, you get both, don't you? I mean, it all fits and it's all brilliant. The legacy, I don't think the legacy, as much as you love it, well, not love it, Steve, but you do like it, it's not going to last as long as the other songs we mentioned, I wouldn't have thought. Even Skyfall, the song, I don't think it would.
It probably would be forgotten, but then isn't that a bit like the film itself? Although, as I've said, I think actually, as far as Daniel Craig films go, it's probably quite good, but as a general consensus of the Daniel Craig films, it's the one that is going to get forgotten.
Yeah.
I think in time it might be a bit of a grower. And it's never going to become a top 10 Bond film with Bond fans, but I think it might grow and actually work its way away from the bottom of the lists to, somewhere around mid-table. But
because if you just judge it on its own merits, we're in an era where we've seen them all at cinema in order, we're told, they're all connected and all this. Whereas I think we said on Diamonds Are Forever, if you'd have just watched On the Majesties, and then you get like this comedy where he's forgotten about his dead wife within a few minutes of the film. Yeah. You'd be, you know, you might be outraged. It wouldn't happen now. The people would be up in arms. But at the time, it's like, no, we want more of
and,
that.
And,
that's
yeah.
what we want.
Doesn't Connery you know, look old in Diamonds Are Forever, which is bizarre because he's so much younger than Roger Moore.
Yeah, yeah.
In Roger Moore's later films, where he's younger than any Roger Moore in Live and Let Die. But he's younger than...
Jeez!
He's younger than... Yeah, he was younger than him.
Because Connery is younger than Roger Moore. So by the time... So when Roger Moore took over...
Connery is younger than
him,
he was
about 4 years older than Diamonds Are Forever Connery.
I just never... I knew he was younger, but I'd never made that link. That in Diamonds, Connery is...
Yeah, we've got a nice new actor who's older than... But it's like...
Wow.
It's like the 1983 Octopus in Never Say Never Again. Roger looks better, doesn't he?
Definitely. Yeah.
But then Sean looks so good in his 50s, 60s onwards. He looks absolutely incredible, doesn't he?
It was bizarre. Connery went through a phase, didn't he? Obviously, he looked phenomenal when he was, you know, Dr. No through to probably Thunderball.
Yeah.
And then he seemed to, you know, I don't know, he didn't, age didn't do him any favours.
He lost interest.
But until, he suddenly hit later life. And you get Hunt for Red October and things, and he just looked awesome. I'm hoping that'll happen to me. I feel I'm in that dip at the moment. I'm in the, I'm in the Connery dip.
I just think you need a great deal of help, mate. Neither you, Mr. Goldiefinger, as well. We've never discussed age, but I'll have whatever either of you chaps are having.
I'm sure you're... He could even be younger than Roger was in Live and Let Die. So
Do you know what? I think he was.
Still,
I think
the gig's still there.
He was 45. I think. I think I am the age of Roger Moore when he did Live and
Let
Die.
Well, there you go.
But it is. It came to me. It came to me.
I know. It's amazing, isn't it? He's 58 in a few seconds.
After my last birthday, I realized that I will never be younger than a new Bond is cast. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's
whoever is cast
hits,
as Bond going forward will never be older than I am now, or I am as I get to their age. Because you won't get a Roger Moore again. You won't get someone who's 45 cast as Bond or 46. So that's I've realised I've reached a pivotal point in my life where I'm basically too old to play Bond. So I don't think the call was coming anyway, but it's definitely coming.
Whoa.
I still, you know, like whenever we have these conversations, I always think, and I know this has been said, but it does deserve saying again, that if Lazenby had carried on from the moment that he was Bond to the age that Moore was in, so if he'd reached 58 in the role of James Bond, he'd still have been Bond in Tomorrow Never Dies.
Absolutely incredible.
It's mental.
That is mental.
It's true.
It's an absolute disgrace to think of it in those terms.
Whoa.
Because he was the youngest, wasn't he? Was he 29? He was the only one in his 20s, wasn't he?
29, yeah.
So young, isn't it? Wow.
What an actor. I can't. 29 taking on
29.
Bond. Are you joking?
It's massive, It was the arrogance, though, that probably helped him, wasn't it? Like, he didn't...
Yeah.
Just came over and nothing to lose, let's just do it. Some people don't like him, but anyway. Yeah, the age thing, I'm like, could I still play professional football at my age? It's getting closer to the age. Say, answer no. Apart from Ryan Giggs and people like that, and Totti.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, in that instance, you have to have sex with someone else's wife and do yoga. So
I've got to.
You can't put that in the podcast, Tom. You can't.
There's nothing I can do now.
No,
I can't. I can't play sport. I can't be Bond. Even
you can write the song. You can do the song.
I mean, what hope have I got?
Yeah.
Just make sure it's in tune. Just do it in tune.
That's not important, apparently.
Well, no.
Get the guitar off the wall, Steve. Get it done. Right, well, lads, thanks for having you tonight. It's been absolutely brilliant. We love James Bond. I know we've criticised aspects of it tonight, but it's when you love something so much, you do get a bit uptight, don't you, when it doesn't quite turn out the way you want. And we will find merit in everything. I think we found merit in Another Way to Die, probably more than I was expecting, so quite pleased with that. and the film as well. We touched on the film, so that's good. But yeah, the other films we've touched upon and the songs are just all-time classics. They'll be being played, hopefully, among Bond fans and other people as long as we're alive and beyond. So, yeah, we're looking forward to No Time to Die. No idea still quite officially when it's going to come out, but by the time you hear this, it still won't have come out. That's all I know. even if we release it next year. No. It is. It's like, just get it out so we can move on to the next bot. Like, they won't even cast anyone, will they, or do anything? But anyway, that's a massive other debate, which we'll go back to many times.
I would like to ask, while we've still got Steve, can I ask you, Steve, who would you cast next?
Oh, do you know what? I've actually got an answer for this. And I don't think I've seen this anywhere else, which probably says that it's a terrible, terrible idea. And I'm terrible with actors' names too. I think his name, I'll tell you who he plays in a minute and you'll be able to tell me if I'm right or not, but I think his name is Chris Hemsworth, but he plays Thor in the Avengers films.
Yeah.
I think he's Australian, is he? But he does a crappy English accent. I don't know if you've seen these Marvel films. I suffer them with because my children like them. But I think he's got a brilliant way of delivering humour.
He's very charismatic.
He's got the Roger Moore.
Yeah,
he's got Roger Moore in his humour. He's got dazzling eyes. He's got Daniel Craig's eyes and physique. He's got Roger Moore's charm and wit. He's got George Lazenby's nationality.
He's a movie star like Connery.
He's a movie star. He's quite blonde. We've had a blonde Bond, you know. For me, just for men. I mean, it works for me, you know, and he could use that. It'd be fine.
You behave, Steve.
I've not thought about that.
I mean, he's got that. He's got that baritone in his voice.
He's got a lovely voice.
Absolutely, which obviously Roger Moore had in abundance, and he's got that. And I just
think lovely warm brown voice.
I think he could be absolutely superb. He's probably too expensive, too famous, and I quite like that the Bond producers actually don't go for they didn't go for Mel Gibson when they could have done or even tried. They went for Timothy Dalton.
If I'm going for the obvious.
For the film stars of the moment, if you like, I think he would be absolutely superb, and he would bring the humour back because he can do humour. He can do humour so well.
I've not thought of that either, and I think that's
better than Hiddleston. Nice. I think.
I hope
his nemesis.
Oh, Miles Better. Oh, sorry, forgive me. That's negative as well to one part. But like, excellent. I think is the answer. And when you know. Barbara and Michael are obviously listening to this when they're about to give us our music contract. They can listen to our casting.
Listen to the demos. As well.
Just while we're in this, because I don't know what Chris or Tom, I don't know what your picks are either. Can I ask that? Is that okay? Chris, who would you like to be James Bond?
I think it's best if it's an unknown actor. That's what I would go for. Someone who fits the... I suppose when you're ahead, I always think of Dalton. But, you know, someone who has those looks for me. Just bring Dalton back. Just for men.
He looks great for his age as well. Could do it.
Yeah. You mean this guy?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Just look at that guy. Like, just so Bond. Look
compliments of Sharky.
Yeah.
Oh, I've watched that film too many times.
You can't watch it too many times.
What about you, though?
Can I just say, for those on the podcast, if you hear that, you were holding up a picture of Bond just after he's...
Oh, yeah.
Before killing Sharky.
This is just an audio podcast. That context.
It's, it's a framed 8x10 of Connery, sort of mid-shot, sort of...
Connery?
Sorry, not Connery. Dalton. Sorry. It's been an enjoyable evening.
It's been a long night.
Sort of like mid-shot. Naval upwards, he's just climbed out of the sea to
the wetsuit.
The absolute sadness of Milton Crest.
Doors.
Quite a place in my office. I put it in our living room to see how long Mrs. Parker would notice. Didn't take long.
And it's not in the living room.
She asked you to replace all the pictures of you now with Timothy Dalton shots.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised. Would not be.
And family portraits.
Fair dues.
Yeah, well, yeah.
I would endorse this. Who would you have, Tom?
Mine are sort of who would have had about 5-10 years ago, usually. Like, I do go back to Jim Caviezel. I know no one ever mentions him. He's probably the best looking guy I've ever seen. he looks like Bond. they would never have an American for some reason. I don't think they'd think audiences would buy it. So I don't think that's an option. He's probably a bit too old now, but he's got such charm and charisma. He's funny. He's deadly. I love him as an actor. I think of the ones you could have, Fassbender would be pretty good. I think he'd be quite a good option. He's a good actor, like Dalton. He's a good actor. He can do the physical stuff. I think he's quite charming. He could probably do the accent. I just can't see it happening, to be honest. I don't know. It's more like I don't want Tom Hardy's far too small. I mean, that's just a standoff, and I don't see him as charming enough. I think that's the thing they really need to get right, the charm, like you say. And that's interesting that Chris Hemsworth's come up, because he fits the bill like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but again, like Chris said, it'd be so nice to have someone like Brosnan was, where you kind of knew him but didn't. He wasn't that famous, and then you think, hang on, look at that guy. He looks so like Bond. Why have we not missed him? This guy in Bridgerton, I've not really seen it, so I couldn't comment on him. I know his voice doesn't maybe sound quite as macho as I would have liked. Like, you know, you've got to have all these things to become Bond. I don't know. I think it will be someone you probably don't expect, which is probably a good thing.
I agree with that entirely. As I say, I'm picking film stars, the one who I think is most obvious of the famous people, but I actually really like that's not usually the route they go down. And I like that they did that with Daniel Craig. He's not my favourite James Bond, but at least it was interesting. And you got a package that I wasn't quite sure what I was going to get. And that was great, rather than it being, you know, some guy who's so famous, he's just going to play it the way he wants to play it, regardless of anybody else.
Oh, my word. It is exciting. I remember Harry, though, said, this will really depress you, our other brother. he is not a fan of the Daniel Craig Bond films either. And he said, you know, I think one of us said, oh, just think, well, you'll have a new Bond, Harry, soon. You know, might be Henry Cavill, something like that. You know, someone you quite like, and there'll be a bit more humour in them. And he's like, just think, though, the opposite could be true. You might be looking back on the Craig films as the most Bond thing we'll ever get again. But hopefully that will... Sorry, Rob, that's, you know...
You know, me jumping off a cliff going, Rupiah! Yeah.
And hey, this next Craig film, you know, it could be great, because they would have seen the criticism of Spectre. You know, these guys aren't stupid. They know how to make films. And I think Craig will desperately want to go out and high. He started so well with Casino Royale. Not for us, a Bond film, but it is a really good film. Really well structured and clever. And it does stick quite faithfully in large places to the Fleming book.
Yeah, yeah. True.
So, you know, I'm more positive about this probably than any film since how I felt before Casino Royale came out.
It's writing themselves into a corner, though. They just can't. How can they get around Blofeld? The Madeleine Swan. What are they supposed to do with that? I don't think anyone bought that, did they? So, and it doesn't seem like. It seems like they've estranged from the trailer, and they sort of come back together. Like, what's that about? I don't know. But I think the directors are real positive.
You know, I've not seen the trailer. I've not seen.
Oh, really?
Well, is that so you don't get spoiled?
Yeah, I did it with Gold. I was so excited about GoldenEye. Like, I couldn't sleep at night. I was so excited.
Yeah,
I watched every single thing that was on before it came out. So I saw the TV specials, you know, but Bond is back. I watched everything. I watched the music video on repeat, you know, watched it over and over again, which had loads of clips from the film. And the trailer, I had that, and I watched that on repeat. So when I went to see the film, I loved it. I saw it three times at the cinema, but I knew so much of it. It was like putting a jigsaw together. I had the jigsaw pieces and I was just watching the film, put them in order. So I kicked myself for that. And I was like, why did you see so much? So ever since then, I've never seen, if I can help it, obviously you sometimes, especially with social media, you grab a few frames and I look away. I try not to watch any other Bond film before it comes out.
No spoilers. Totally agree.
No spoilers.
Oh dear. Well, there's not an awful lot revealed in the trailers, really. But it's more the rumours you hear, isn't it? which I won't say.
But it's but it's the suggestion of massive secrets, like
There always has to be secrets.
Appeal to me at all, you know, like when her secret comes out, it will ruin him or whatever. Like, I don't care.
I don't care. Yeah, just want a baddie and an end fight and a cave or something.
Yeah, but maybe I'm part of the problem. Maybe I'm part of the problem saying that that's what I'm after.
No,
I don't know.
We're all great Bond fans. We love it. But yeah. Great to have you on, Steve. It's been absolutely fantastic. It's just so good to...
It's been an absolute treat.
Yeah, just someone who thinks like us, but also has some different opinions, which I think we will take on board. Basically, we'll have to rewatch Quantum of Solace. Is one of the things we'll have to we'll draw from
with
tonight.
David Mitchell very much in your mind.
Oh, yeah, David Mitchell. Yeah, yeah.
This is the point I go to the opera.
Yeah. Elvis and David Mitchell at the opera. A highlight of... Yeah. No, it's been brilliant, guys. Thanks as well, of course, to Rob and Chris. And we will be back very soon with more episodes on the songs and the films. And I'm sure we'll have you back, Steve. It's been wonderful. So thank you for this evening.
Thank you so much. It's been brilliant. Thanks, Guy. Lovely just to talk Bond with people who know this stuff and love Timothy Dalton.
Yes, Dalton love. That's the main thing.
Really the best.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.